I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday, British Prime Minister Theresa May expelled 23 Russians she called spies or undeclared intelligence officers in response to the poisoning of an ex-Russian double agent and his daughter. She said it was highly likely that Moscow was behind the attack, something the Russian government has denied. Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia are in critical condition after being found on a bench outside a mall in Salisbury. The nerve agent used is identified as Novichok and was developed in the former Soviet Union. While President Trump has remained largely mum on the attack, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said this on Wednesday.
Salisbury will not be the last place we see chemical weapons used. They could be used here in New York or in cities or of any country that sits on this council. This is a defining moment. Time and time again, member states say they oppose the use of chemical weapons under any circumstance. Now one member stands accused of using chemical weapons on the sovereign soil of another member. The credibility of this council will not survive if we fail to hold Russia accountable.
We asked Richard Perez Pena to join us. He's a news editor in the London Bureau for the New York Times. Richard, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
Is the Cold War back?
I'm not sure that it ever really went away.
Meaning that this is just the latest attack, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, under Vladimir Putin, the government of Russia has seen its advantage in creating disadvantages in the West, disunity, weakening governments, and it has flexed its muscles in ways that, gain world condemnation and doesn't seem to alter their behavior in the least in Ukraine, in Syria. They want to project an image of strength, and very often that involves weakening democracies in the West.
We, of course, don't know, and Russia denies that they are involved, but let's just assume that they are. Why would they do this?
That's a really good question. Spy swaps, we should back up. This guy who had been a Russian military intelligence agent was found to have been selling secrets to the British, and then later the West and Russia swapped imprisoned spies. So spy swaps have been going on since, the beginning of the Cold War. This is not a new thing. There's sort of an accepted rule book of how this works. Those spies are then supposed to be out of the game and live out their lives quietly, and each side leaves them alone. We don't know what prompted this. We don't know what Mr. Skripal was doing. We don't know what he represented to the Kremlin. A motive is sort of hard to determine here, other than just sort of striking fear into the hearts of Russians in the West.
Oh, interesting. Well, it does remind me in some way, and I'm sure a lot of other people as well. This was back in 2006. A former FSB officer, Alexander Litvinenko, was also poisoned, although I believe with a different agent. Do you see some parallels there?
Yeah. Well, there are some parallels, but also some very obvious differences. I mean, people who have been very vocal critics of Putin's government have repeatedly turned up dead in Russia and elsewhere. And that was Litvinenko. He was a very vocal critic of Putin. Skripal was not. His name wasn't known to the public. This guy had, kept his life fairly quiet. But yeah, the idea of using these very exotic and hard to detect agents, polonium-210, radioactive isotope in the case of Litvinenko, and then this thing called Novichok in the case of Skripal, does suggest, a very sophisticated state-run operation.
Theresa May seemed to say that she either saw it as the work of the Kremlin or some outlier group that the Kremlin did not have control over. What are the various thoughts or ideas about who is truly behind this?
You know, there are a lot of theories. There's a lot of speculation. It's known that, I mean, assuming that Novichok does turn out to be the agent, and I think the international community will want to test that independently, it's known that this was developed by the Soviet Union. It's also known that Russia was supposed to have destroyed its chemical weapons stockpiles under an international treaty. So, you know, any talk about who else might have had it at this point is just guesswork.
Because, I mean, it could have been picked up by some rogue group, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about how in the sort of Wild West days of the 90s, when the Soviet Union first collapsed and, you know, the government was weak and was selling off assets and things were just very chaotic. The economy was collapsing, that all kinds of things that shouldn't end up on the black market might have ended up on the black market. And that speculation is extended to nuclear weapons.
Some have said this was bungled, and some have said this is successful. How do you see it?
Meaning the attack?
Yes, the attack in Salisbury.
If it was intended to really strike fear into the hearts of anybody who has ever crossed Russia, then it was probably extremely successful. If it was intended to kill Mr. Skripal, then obviously, so far at least, he seems to be clinging to life, although I don't know in what condition.
Right. And his daughter, obviously, as well.
Right.
Theresa May has announced the expulsion of something like 23, I'm not sure, are they diplomats, are they spies, are they undeclared intelligence officers? Who are these people that she has identified?
Well, we don't know much about the individuals. It's common knowledge that governments use diplomatic cover for espionage agents. I mean, that's a very widespread and old practice. These are people who officially had embassy jobs in London. You know, what their real jobs were unofficially, I don't know. The government says it has information saying that they were engaged in spying. Obviously, there are other spies out there who don't have embassy cover jobs. And whether other shoes are going to drop from the British government, we don't know.
What are some of the options that the Prime Minister has?
This is interesting because the things that Britain can do on its own really involve squeezing the finances of the wealthy Russians who are in the UK, many of whom are allied with Putin. And, you know, ethics groups like Transparency International say that a lot of them have ill-gotten wealth, you know, that corruption is behind a lot of these fortunes. There's a lot of real estate, very fancy real estate in London that's owned by Russians, often through shell corporations that are sort of hard to get to the bottom of. And there is on the books a British law that allows the government to go after what it calls unexplained wealth. You know, if you have a $50,000 a year income, but you live in a $5 million house, and you can't explain where you got that money, they can go after it. That is something they could really use to tighten the screws on some of Putin's circle. And the problem with doing that is, if you're going to use it across the board, you're also going to potentially hit a lot of Putin's foes who are in Russia, who are in the UK. And you're also going to hurt British finances. You're going to hurt the real estate market. You're going to hurt the investment market. There's a big infrastructure that has developed in London to serve the interests of wealthy Russians.
Which does raise a question. Why are there so many wealthy Russians living in London? And maybe there are wealthy Russians living in other large cities as well. But why London?
London in particular, because the British government has been particularly willing to grant residency and to allow people to move money in without asking a lot of questions.
I played a clip from a UN Ambassador Nikki Haley. She was speaking at the United Nations. What are international communities, whether it is United Nations or the EU or NATO or others, doing in response, or at least talking about doing in response to this?
There are a lot of expressions of concern and solidarity with Britain, but it remains to be seen whether there's any substance behind any of that. The international community imposed sanctions on Russia for its annexation of Crimea and the aggression in Ukraine generally back in 2014. It's had a real effect on the Russian economy, but it hasn't seemed to have changed the behavior of the Russian government. And since then, the international community hasn't shown any appetite to crack down with even tougher sanctions, not for Russia's actions in Syria or anything else that's gone on since then. So it's not clear why this episode would prompt a tougher response than those previous episodes failed to do. You know, we don't see any substantive responses yet. It's probably still too early, but right. I'm skeptical.
Is it because it's a nerve agent and that seems to, pardon the expression, strike a nerve in people, thinking that this nerve
sure.
agent from a previous time is being used?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems to sort of break the rules, as if there were any rules. But, you know, there have been a number of previous suspicious deaths of people who had crossed Russia, deaths in the UK, and they didn't get this kind of a reaction.
What's been the response in England and specifically in Salisbury? And apparently this agent was found, this nerve agent was found mm-hmm. in, I think, a restaurant, a bar, places
yep.
where this double agent and his daughter had been.
Well, I mean, to use a very highly technical term, people are freaked out. You know, hundreds of people may have been exposed, at least, you know, to minute traces of this chemical. People were told, you know, go home and thoroughly wash your clothes, use baby wipes to wipe down your glasses, your cell phone, anything that might have come in contact with any surface that had this stuff on it. You know, that's and the fact that that warning wasn't issued until a week after the attack didn't exactly inspire confidence. There is one police officer who aided the two Russians and was also taken ill, obviously also exposed to the same agent. And there were some other people who had minor symptoms among the first responders. So far, at least, we don't know of anybody in the general public having been hurt by this. But people are scared.
And understandably so. Richard Perez Pena, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. And
you're welcome.
Getting us up to speed on this poisoning that happened in a place called Salisbury, England. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be talking with Ian Buruma. He's got a new memoir. It's about being a young man in Japan in the 1970s. Stay with us. We'll be right back.